We are on the verse 19, I believe. This is page 31. Shri Brahmana Uchuhu. Kindly repeat after me. Partha. Prajavita,
Prajavita
Sakshat,
Ikshvakur,
Iva,
Manavaha,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Ikshvakur,
Iva Manavaha. Brahmanya, Satya,
Sandhas,
Cha,
Ramo,
Dasharathir, Yatha. So we'll start from the top. Partha Prajavita Sakshad,
Ikshvakur Iva Manavaha.
Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha,
Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha,
Ramo Dasharathiryata,
Ramo Dasharathiryata,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Ikshvakur Iva Manavaha. Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha, Ramo Dasharathiryatha,
Ramo Dasharathiryatha,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Ikshvakur Iva Manavaha,
Ikshvakur Iva Manavaha,
Brahmanya Sandhya Satya, Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha, Ramo Dasharathiryatha,
Ramo Dasharathiryatha,
Shri Brahmana Uchuhu,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Ikshvakur Iva Manavaha, Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha, Ramo Dasharathiryata.
Shri Brahmana Uchuhu,
Shri Brahmana Uchuhu,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Ikshvakuriva Manavaha,
Ikshvakuriva Manavaha,
Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha,
Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha,
Ramo Dasharathiryatha,
Ramo Dasharathiryatha. Shri Brahmana Uchu,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Ikshvakur Iva Manavaha, Brahmanya Satya Sandhyascha,
Ramo
Dasharathiryatha. Shri Brahmana Uchuhu,
Partha Prajavita
Sakshat, Ikshvakur Iva Manavaha, Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha,
Ramo
Dasharathiryata. Shri Brahmana Uchuhu,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat,
Partha Prajavita Sakshat, Ikshvakur Iva Manavaha,
Brahmanya Satya Sandhascha,
रामो दाशरथिर्यथा ब्राह्मणः द गुड ब्राह्मणस् उचुः सेड पार्था ओ सन ऑफ प्रिता प्रजा दोज हु आर बॉर्न अविता मेंटेनर साक्षात डायरेक्टली इक्ष्वाकु इवाह एग्जैक्टली लाइकिंग इक्ष्वाकु मानवः सन ऑफ मनु ब्रह्मण्या फॉलोअर्स एंड रेस्पेक्टफुल टू द ब्राह्मणास सत्य संदह ट्रूथफुल बाय प्रॉमिस चा ऑल्सो रामः द पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड इन रामा दाशरथिः द सन ऑफ महाराज दशरथ यथा Like him. Translation. Kindly repeat after me. The learned Brahmana said, O son of Pritha, this child shall be exactly like King Ikshvaku,
son of Manu,
in maintaining all those who are born. As for following the Brahminical principles, especially in being true to his promise, he shall be exactly like Rama, the personality of Godhead, son of Maharaj Dasharath, purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Maharaj Ki Jai. Praja means the living being who has taken his birth in the material world. Actually, the living being has no birth and no death, but because of his separation from the service of the Lord and due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he is offered a suitable body to satisfy his material desires. In doing so, one becomes conditioned by the laws of material nature, and the material body is changed in terms of his own work. The living entity thus transmigrates from one body to another in 8,400,000 species of life. But due to his being the part and parcel of the Lord, he is not only maintained with all necessities of life by the Lord, but also is protected by the Lord and his representatives, the saintly kings. These saintly kings give protection to all the prajas or the living beings to live and to fulfill their terms of imprisonment. Maharaj Parikshit was actually an ideal saintly king because while touring his kingdom, he happened to see that a poor cow was about to be killed by personified Kali, whom he at once took to task as murderer. This means that even animals were given protection by the saintly administrators. Not from any sentimental point of view, but because those who have taken their birth in the material world have right to live. All saintly kings, beginning from king of the sun globe down to the king of earth, are so inclined by the influence of Vedic literatures. The Vedic literatures are taught in the higher planets also, as there is reference in Bhagavad Gita 4.1 about teachings to the sun god Vivashvan by the Lord. And such lessons are transferred by disciplic succession, as it was done by the sun god to his son Manu, and from Manu to Maharaj Ikshvaku. There are 14 Manus in the day of Brahma, and the Manu referred to herein is the 7th Manu, who is one of the Prajapatis, those who create progeny, and he is the son of sun god. He is known as Vaivashvata Manu. He had 10 sons, and Maharaj Ikshvaku is one of them. Maharaj Ikshvaku also learnt Bhakti Yoga as taught in the Bhagavad Gita from his father Manu, who got it down from his father, the sun god. Adi Guru Prabhu, can you just read the purport, please? Sorry for the technical difficulty.
Later on, the teaching of Bhagavad Gita came down by disciplic succession from Maharaj Ikshvaku. But in course of time, the chain was broken by unscrupulous persons, and therefore it again had to be taught to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So all the Vedic literatures are current from the very beginning of creation of the material world, and thus the Vedic literatures are known as Aupaurusheya, not made by man. The Vedic knowledge was spoken by the Lord and first heard by Brahma, the first created living being within the universe. Maharaj Ikshvaku, one of the sons of Vaivaswat Manu. He had 100 sons. He prohibited meat eating. His son, Shashada, became the next king after his death.
Manu. The Manu mentioned in this verse as the father of Ikshvaku is the seventh Manu of the name Vaivaswata Manu, the son of sun god Vivasvan, to whom Lord Krishna instructed the teachings of Bhagavad Gita prior to his teaching them to Arjuna. Mankind is the descendant of Manu. This Vaivaswata Manu had 10 sons named Ikshvaku, Nabaga, Drishta, Saryati, Narishyanta, Nabhaga, Dishta, Karusa, Prasadra, and Vasuman. The Lord's incarnation, Matsya, the gigantic fish, was advented during the beginning of Vaivaswata Manu's reign. He learned the principles of Bhagavad Gita from his father Vivasvan, the sun god, and he re-instructed the same to his son Maharaj Ikshvaku. In the beginning of the Treta Yuga, the sun god instructed devotional service to Manu, and Manu in his turn instructed it to Ikshvaku for the welfare of the whole human society.
Lord Rama, the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnated himself as Sri Rama, accepting the sonhood of his pure devotee Maharaj Dashratha, the king of Ayodhya. Lord Rama descended along with his plenary portions, and all of them appeared as his younger brothers. In the month of Chaitra, on the ninth day of the growing moon in the Treta Yuga, the Lord appeared as usual to establish the principles of religion and to annihilate the disturbing elements. When he was just a young boy, he helped the great sage Vishwamitra by killing the Subahu and striking Maricha, the she-demon, who was disturbing the sage in their daily discharge of duties. The Brahmanas and Kshatriyas are meant to cooperate for the welfare of the mass of people. The Brahmana sages endeavor to enlighten the people by perfect knowledge, and the Kshatriyas are meant for their protection. Lord Ramchandra is the ideal king for maintaining and protecting the highest culture of humanity, known as Brahmanya Dharma. The Lord is specifically the protector of the cows and the Brahmanas, and hence he enhances the prosperity of the world. He rewarded administrative demigods by effective weapon to conquer the demons through the agency of Vishwamitra. He was present in the bow sacrifice of King Janaka, and by breaking the invincible bow of Shiva, he married Sita Devi, the daughter of Maharaj Janaka.
After his marriage, he accepted exile in the forest for 14 years by the order of his father, Maharaj Dashrath. To help the administration of the demigods, he killed 14,000 demons, and by the intrigues of the demons, his wife Sita Devi was kidnapped by Ravan. He made friendship with Sugriv, who was helped by the Lord to kill Vali, brother of Sugriv. By the help of Lord Ram, Sugriv became the king of the Vanaras, a race of gorillas. The Lord built a floating bridge of stones on the Indian Ocean and reached Lanka, the kingdom of Ravan, who had kidnapped Sita. Later on, Ravan was killed by him, and Ravana's brother Vibhishan was installed on the throne of Lanka. Vibhishan was one of the brothers of Ravan, a demon, but Lord Ram made him immortal by his blessings. On the expiry of 14 years, after settling the affairs at Lanka, the Lord came back to his kingdom, Ayodhya, by Flower Plain. He instructed his brother Shatrughna to attack Lavanasura, who reigned at Mathura, and the demon was killed. He performed 10 Ashwamedha sacrifices, and later on he disappeared while taking a bath in the Sharayu river. The great epic Ramayana is the history of Lord Ram's activities in the world, and the authoritative Ramayana was written by the great poet Valmiki.
Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayo mudireye nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Sarva shastrabdi piyusha, sarva vedaika satfala, sarva siddhanta ratnadhya, sarva lokaika drikprada, Sarva Bhagavata Prana Srimad Bhagavata Prabhu Kali Dvandota Aditya Sri Krishna Parivartita Paramananda Pataya Prema Varsha Aksharayate Sarvada Sarva Sevyaya Sri Krishna Ayanamostu Madeka Bando Matsangin Manguru Man Mahadhana Man Nishtaraka Mad Bhagya Madananda Namostate Asadhu Salta Dain Ati Nichochataraka Hana Munchakadachin Mam Premnahrit Kante Osparana. So in this particular chapter, Maharaj Parikshit is born, and he is protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As we all know, Ashwatthama had this nefarious and devious plan to kill all the offsprings and the generation of the Pandavas. And as he hurled the Ashwatthama weapon, as the Brahmasra weapon, Uttara cried out for the mercy of the Lord, and she took shelter of Krishna. And Krishna, he entered into the womb of Uttara, and with his power, he saved Maharaj Parikshit from the devastation of Brahmasra weapon. That Brahmasra weapon, which cannot be counter-attacked, which cannot be thwarted, which cannot be stopped by any force on this planet, but Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the power of one who takes shelter, or this is the guarantee, the security of one who takes shelter at lotus feet of Krishna. Otherwise in this world there is no question of being saved by anybody. There may be temporary feelings of guarantee and safety, but that is just temporary. That is the nature of this world. And after Maharaj Parikshit was born, then Maharaj Yudhishthira became anxious, as is the case in every family. Like, what will this son do? Is he good? Is he fit? It was not Maharaj Yudhishthira felt a sort of ego or swelling with pride, but Maharaj Yudhishthira was an ideal king. And the ideal king's biggest concern is this: how will the kingdom be administered when I retire? That is probably one of the things, it's always there. As soon as a king ascends the throne, the first thing they'll start thinking is about the future. And that is the nature of ideal king. Not in the modern day world, that as soon as the person becomes president, he thinks about re-election campaign. What should I do? Where should I get money from for the next time when I run elections? That is not the concern of the ideal king. The ideal king has to think, like, after me, who will be the person to rule? Because at that time, there was no question of voting or voting machine, electronic machines, voting by overseas, whatever you want to call it. At that time, the king appointed his successor. And the principle was such that the king wouldn't mind going out of his family if he thought the members of his own family were not fit to rule the kingdom. And so Maharaj Yudhishthira's biggest concern was, so he invited all these Brahmanas, he said, tell me about this boy. How will he be? What is his future? Because at that time, the Pandavas, they were the only surviving members of the Kuru dynasty. And after that, Maharaj Parikshit was their only hope for the kingdom, for the safe or the proper ruling of kingdom. This was the biggest concern of Maharaj Yudhishthir. Therefore, he asked the question of the Brahmins. And then the Brahmana started telling him that, my dear king, that this child is going to be the best in all respects. And to start with, they use this particular verse. They say that this child will be exactly like King Ikshvaku. O son of Manu, in maintaining all those who are born. So from this we understand, and from the purport also we understand, that maintaining all those who are born includes animals. Every living being has a right to life. Only in the modern world are there slaughterhouses, because of which there is a cruel destruction of animals in the name that they are not fit to live. Or it's the gross sense gratification. That's okay. In this country, it's very, very clearly visible. A man or a woman is subject to prison for abusing or cruelly treating an animal. Now, what happened was, an elderly lady in Seattle and her son, they abandoned the house. In the bank, they couldn't pay the mortgage. The bank came, they foreclosed on the house, and they walked away from the house. Now, a few months later, when the person or the bank or the official of bank who came to actually log the property or inspect the property, it was such a horrible foul smell emanating from the house. And when they broke into the house, about 30 dogs and 30 cats and 2 dogs were in the house, and most of them were dead. Because of not being treated, they were locked up in the house, there was nothing to eat, and the cats were dead. Only one cat survived. It was so emaciated that practically it was on the verge of death. And this incident was reported to the authorities, who immediately arrested that man, that mother and son duo, and put them into the bars, behind the bars, for abusing the animals. Now, it is good that there is a law for protecting the animals, but in the same country, there are indiscriminate slaughterhouses. So this sort of vision is kind of doesn't gel with the proper application of law, because the cows, the other farm animals which are slaughtered, have as much right to live as those cats and dogs which were subjected to cruelty, and the perpetrators were put into prison. So it's not an equal kind of law. But when an ideal king comes and takes throne, then what happens is that every living being is protected, or is given assurance of protection. So Maharaj Parikshit, the Brahmanas told that he will be like Maharaj Ikshvaku, who will give complete protection. And it doesn't work one way. It is that the citizens are also, they feel very safe under such a king. They know that justice will be served. They know that the human being citizens will be safe. The animal citizens also feel safe. In this modern world, unfortunately, because of the wrong vision, the animals are treated as less worthy of living. Yeah. Less worthy of living. Only human beings are worthy of living. But unfortunately, the administrators, they do not know that the cycle changes. Today you have cow as your citizen. Tomorrow you have a human being, and in the same country there is always this rotation of souls, which is completely going on at all times, and everybody should be protected. There was another point I wanted to make, but I forgot. Anyways, if I recollect that point, I'll make that. And also, the other important thing is, as soon as Maharaj Ikshvaku comes into picture, then we know that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that I spoke this knowledge to sun god Vivashvan, and Vivashvan in turn gave it to his son Ikshvaku. And so Lord Rama was also in the line of the kings of Ikshvaku in the Raghu dynasty. So the other important criteria for an ideal king is that he should be trained up. He should be having knowledge in that disciplic succession. Without that knowledge, nobody can become a perfect ruler, because there is no vision. There is no vision of transcendental knowledge. All you are thinking, because you think you are this body, you think that somehow that political post which I am being appointed to or which I am running for is going to help me enhance my sense gratification. Now, if one goes under such an illusion into the office, in India that's pretty gross. It's pretty easily visible. When a politician goes into the office, the goal is to amass as much wealth as you can and pass it down to your next generation. That's it. But at least in some other countries, probably, there is still that sense of, you know, sense of duty and all that. But again, it's very, you know, very vague and opaque sense of duty. You know, okay, I have my duty towards citizens, but the cows, let them be slaughtered. That's, again, not the correct way. Unfortunately, the modern kings, they do not know this simple rule, that you are going to partake a portion of the sins being committed under your jurisdiction. It would be 1/6. Because there was this interesting story. Now, Ramanujacharya's teacher was Yamunacharya, and he was the guru, and we heard the story in Sri Govindadatta Prabhu heard it in Sri Rangam, but I'll repeat it for the sake of repeating it, just to highlight the point of the kings, is that now Ramanujacharya's teacher, what was the story again, Prabhu? He was young, right? No. Yamunacharya, he was young.
Challenged by
Chola King. Yeah, he was
very young, he was learning from another acharya.
Correct.
Who was challenged by the soldiers who were representing the pandit in the court.
Thank you. So the king, thank you, Prabhuji. The king had a pandit, and this pandit was vastly learned, and he was very arrogant of his scholarship. Hare Krishna, no problems. He was very arrogant of the scholarship, and he would defeat all the scholars in the kingdom. Now, whoever were defeated by this scholar would have to pay yearly taxes to that scholar, like some copyrights or royalties. Because he had the king's backing, whoever didn't pay up, the soldiers would come after that person and persecute that particular person who didn't fail to pay these taxes to the scholar. Now, Yamunacharya was studying under, I forget the name of his teacher, but he was studying under that teacher. And unfortunately, that teacher was defeated by the scholar. And the teacher had gone out of the ashram, and young Yamunacharya was just by himself. And these soldiers came. And they were very rude. They were talking very disrespectfully towards his teacher. This really, and Yamunacharya was 10 or 12 years old, I believe, at that point of time. And he was taken aback by such harsh behavior from the soldiers and such disrespectful attitude towards his guru. And he said, why should my guru pay? He said, because you're a guru lost in a debate and he has to pay this particular tax which he has to pay. And then Yamunacharya said, all right, I'll debate on behalf of my guru. I'll debate this scholar. The soldier said, you are crazy. This scholar has defeated everybody. You are a small young boy. What can you defeat? Whom can you defeat? Nevertheless, Yamunacharya went to the court, and that scholar started first. He started asking him some questions. And Yamunacharya was able to easily answer those questions. He said, you think I'm a boy? That's why you're asking these simple questions? Ask more tough ones. And then the scholar started asking more tough questions. And then Yamunacharya was able to easily answer them. Now, before this, there is a small thing that the king and queen, they have a debate. The scholar was king's favorite. And he says, yeah, this boy is coming? No problem. My scholar will defeat him just like that. Queen says, no, you're not sure. You know, I heard this boy is a bright guy. So I feel that this boy will defeat your scholar. No, what are you talking? Okay, this is the wager. If this boy defeats my scholar, then I will give half of my kingdom to this boy. And then the queen said, like, if your scholar defeats this boy, then I'll become the servant for the rest of your life, something like that, to that effect. In any case, Yamunacharya came, the debate started, and then the scholar asked these questions. Yamunacharya taunted him, asked me more difficult questions. He asked him more difficult questions, and he was able to answer all. Now Yamunacharya said, all right, it's my turn to question you. Answer these three questions, and then if you answer them correctly, then I'll accept defeat right here. Then the first question Yamunacharya asked was three questions. Chaste, perfect character. The first question he asked is, your mother is not a barren woman. Refute it. So the question was, your mother is not a barren woman. Means she is capable of producing children. Refute that. And he was stuck. How can I say no to that? How can I refute that? I came out of my mother's womb, so I can't say my mother is a barren woman. He was silent. Then Ramanacharya asked the second question. Our king, King Chola, I don't forget the name. Our king, he's a man of perfect character. He's sinless and he does his duty perfectly. Refute it. Now, right now, you are in the assembly in front of all the great scholars of the kingdom and he has to refute that my own king is a stupid guy. He has to prove practically that my own king is an irreligious person, a sinful person. And this scholar was bubbling up with anger from within. He knew he couldn't refute that in front of everybody. At the same time, he couldn't remain silent because that would mean his defeat. And then he's quiet. What's your third question? Well, the third question is this. Our queen is the most chaste and the most pious lady, always serving her husband. Refute it. This is even terrible. King is one thing. To accuse queen of being adulterous or not being faithful to her husband, that means death. If he speaks, it'll be death punishment. If he doesn't speak, he's defeat. That scholar got furious, mad. He said, you are trying to just defeat me by these useless questions. How can I commit this treason against the king in his own court, in front of everybody? This is like wrong. And then he exhorts his followers, kill this boy. He's just out to destroy me. And then Yamunacharya, he says, pipe down, calm down. It's okay. I'll refute you. I'll answer your questions. And if I give you correct answers to my own questions, then you're okay. He said, okay, calms down. And then he says, the first thing is that you said your mother is a barren woman. Refute that. Well, according to Manu Smriti, a woman, this is with respect to, no offense to any woman, because that's what my Guru Maharaj said in the tour, that Manu Smriti doesn't apply so much to Kali Yuga. So. A woman who has only one child, according to Manu Smriti, is considered a barren woman. So you need at least one more child to be like, you know. So since you are the only child of your mother, so your mother is a barren woman according to Manu Smriti. The second is that this king is a righteous, sinless king. In his conduct, in his duties, he is carrying out in a perfect way with no faults of his own. But this is Kali Yuga. And in Kali Yuga, the king shares 1/6 of all the pious activities which are done by the population. He also shares the sin which is committed by his population. In this Kali Yuga, because sin is more than piety, this king is sinful, not because of his own conduct, but the conduct of his citizens, which is beyond his rule. And the third thing he gave the answer was that the queen is married to king, but the king is representative of 8 demigods. So indirectly, queen is married to 8 demigods. Thus, she is not a chaste woman. Everybody kind of accepts that, you know, and Yamunacharya like wins that debate. The point of the story is that in the ideal king, in the modern world, the politicians do not know that they are sharing, they are accumulating the sin of the people and the sin of this land. Even if it's not one-sixth is terrible. Even if it is just a little portion, because of the volumes of sinful activities that are being committed by the people, it's not a nice position. That people do not know. They make a mad rush to the office thinking that I'll get power, prestige, position. Essentially, basically, I'll maintain my livelihood somehow by getting into the office in a better way. But there are ramifications of running for office is a lot more. And people do not have the knowledge. They think that this is it. This is one life. I have to become best in this life. But this is meager. You become a president of USA, you just take more and more sin of the people. In this country, the sins are left, right and center. Every sort of sin is being happening because you don't. The reason why the shastras are strict is because you have the power. You should have the power to curb the sin. That is the first duty of ideal king, is to curb the sinful activities among his people and take the people onto the right path. If you don't do this activity, then you are not doing your duty and you will accumulate sinful reactions. So Maharaj Parikshit, in that sense, was the ideal king, because he would later we learn from the Bhagavatam in the first canto, 18th or 19th chapter, as to how even a bull which was being abused or about to be killed by a Shudra, who's Kali personified, and Maharaj Parikshit, thing is, he didn't go and bargain. He didn't go and deal. You know, hey, what you're doing? You know, don't do this. He took his sword and about to kill that person. That is the extent of the ideal king. Of course, one may argue that in the modern democratic setup, you know, the person who is running, who's the prime minister or a president, is not like having the complete power. He's not the authority on himself, and there is like all these senates or parliaments, and then there is judiciary, and there's so many other wings of government. But nevertheless, it is the duty of the concerted people who are in the government to prevent this particular sinful tendency among the people and take the people onto the right path, which is Krishna consciousness. Either way, there should be some sort of checks and balances. So it's unfortunate that's the way the democracy works. I'll take the questions, Prabhuji, just 5 minutes. And then the second part of this particular verse is that in following the Brahmanical principles, especially being true to his promise, he shall be exactly like Lord Rama. And we all know the story of how Lord Rama was so truthful to his promise that once he gave the word to his father, this happened, that he gave the word to his father that I will go to the forest on your order, and then nobody could change his mind. Now, Bharat was away. During this whole conspiracy, Bharat was away. And when he came back, he was furious at his mother for bringing about such destruction in his family. And then he was determined. I am not going to rule this kingdom. I have to do only one thing. And that one thing is that I have to go to the forest and get Ramchandra back and install him on his throne. That's my duty right now. And he was really concerned that what if people think that I was also a part of conspiracy, that I teamed up with my mother to snatch away the position from Rama. And he immediately rushed to the forest. And then we know the story of how like Lakshmana saw Bharata approaching with the army. And to go to forest, he didn't like put on hiking boots. He put in a whole road. He put in a magnificent, beautiful road, constructed a road to Chitrakoot. He took all the armies. He took all the people. Not because he wanted to show his power, but to say that, you know, the whole voice of people is behind you. You have to come to Ayodhya. And then he constructed a magnificent road, took all of the population and all of the army and went to Rama. And Lakshmana, he saw from a distance, he thought it was a hostile intent. But then Rama said, calm down. And then Bharata went to Lord Rama. He said, I'm not going to do it. You have to do it. And then he gave so many arguments. He was like till the last minute trying to persuade Rama somehow or other, please come. You know, this is not, I was no part of this plan. I just want you to come back. And then Rama was firm. He said, no, I gave my promise to my father. And the duty is, you have to be the king. And I have to be in the forest for 14 years. And then we know the story of, about how Bharata said, then, you know, no, I'm not going to. I'm going to rule on your behalf. And then he lived exactly like Rama. He was wearing bark of a tree. He was living in a small hut outside of Ayodhya. But at the same time, he was consulting his ministers. But then again, we should understand that the people, the prosperity of Ayodhya increased even in absence of Rama. It was not Bharata was neglecting his duties. He was perfectly performing his duties. But he said to Lord Ram, all right, if this is your order, I'll accept it. But know this for truth. At the end of 14 years, exactly after the 14 years have passed, and I haven't seen you, and you haven't come back to Ayodhya to become the king, I am going to enter into fire. This is my promise. And then Rama was a man of word. He knew the value of promise and those promises. So it is said at the end, when he killed Ravan, and then he had to install Vibhishan, and he was held up because of other ceremonial duties. Like we went to Rameshwaram and we saw that how he had to perform puja for Lord Shiva, and there were so many other things that were going on. His biggest fear was that Bharata will enter into fire if I don't reach by exactly this time. And he sent Hanuman ahead of him, saying, you go right now to Ayodhya. Tell Bharata that I'm coming. Don't let him perform this ghastly act of enter into the fire. So the value of promise, of how you give the word, and then you try your best. Of course, you should understand that giving word is like, it has different meanings. In the modern life, we should the practical aspect is that if we give word, we try our best to fulfill it. But we shouldn't be known as a person who just gives the word and doesn't do it. But at the same time, you go to the extent that, you know, for example, this is a story. You are given a promise that you are going to be at a certain place at a certain time, and then you are running late. It can't be that I'm going to go at a neck-break speed of 100 miles per hour to reach that position, getting 20 tickets in the way and then causing harm to others. So the point is that one of the seniorly, our Guru Maharaj says that we are humans. We give the promise, we do our best to fulfill those promises, and we have to be strict. We should make a promise in a way that we deliberate on it, we kind of consider it, not just whimsically say, I'll do it, and at the same time, you know, forget about this. At the same time, you can't go to the fanatical extent of doing it because situation demands in the way. So there are promises to people, there are promises to Guru, there are promises to Krishna. Ideally, one shouldn't promise before the deity. One shouldn't take oath before the deity. That's there in Rupa Goswami's Nectar of Devotion. Oath in the sense like, you know, swearing, go to the Lord and telling him, I do this or something like that. If it's like an initiation and it's taking place, that's a different oath compared to like going to the Lord and saying, I'll do this or do that. So there are many varieties of promises. And then promise to the Guru and promise to our spiritual life is the first. If there are considerations, there are, I gave promise here, I gave promise there, which takes precedence, is that your spiritual life and your orders of Guru take precedence over all other promises. You have to break a promise, so you have to break a promise. Because, but in the previous life, in the previous ages, the kings, once they made a promise, they would stick by it. It was very strict. So in the matter of promises, here, Arjuna had taken a promise. The promise is that anybody who belittles his valor and his prowess, and his Gandhi Babu especially, he would kill him. That was his promise. Now, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhishthir was injured and he retired into the camp to be treated. Now Arjuna I believe he was injured by Karna, and Maharaj Yudhishthir retreated into the camp to get treated. And Arjuna heard that Maharaj Yudhishthir was seriously ill, or he had some problem. He couldn't know exactly what was going on, so he was concerned, and he immediately went to the camp where Maharaj Yudhishthir was. And then Maharaj Yudhishthir asked him, "So did you avenge my insult? Did you go and kill that Karna?" And Arjuna said, "No. I mean, I came here because I thought you were injured. I just wanted to find out how you were." Maharaj Yudhishthir became furious. "How dare you come back from the battlefield without avenging the dishonor that has happened to me? You are useless. You are, what is the use of this Gandhi Babu? Throw this Gandhi Babu out." No, Arjuna took a vow that he would kill anybody who would insult him or his prowess. Now, and Krishna was right there. As usual. As usual. So he said, killing a person also means you can kill him through words. And so Arjuna blasts off at Yudhishthira Maharaj. "You are a king? You are supposed to be protecting the whole population. You couldn't even protect your own wife from the gambling match." This left, right, and center he gives. And then he takes dust from the feet of his Yudhishthira after he goes for him. Then he goes back. So that's how like Arjuna keeps up his promise. So at that time, it was very, very strict promise. We should also, as aspiring devotees, we should keep our words. Pray to Krishna, more importantly, to give us the power to keep up the words, because we in ourselves are not very significant or very elevated or advanced. Neither do we have mystic powers to keep things in place. We just, at least I speak for myself, I'm just a fallen conditioned soul of the world, being tossed by the waves of material nature. I don't even have a control over my own body, so I try my best to keep the words and keep the promises. But that was the ideal situation at that point of time. Thank you so very much. Any questions, any comments? Yes, Rakshit Prabhu had a question. Thank you, Prabhu, for waiting.
It's more of a comment, and then there is a question in it. We have been hearing in quite a few of these Bhagavatam verses about the ideal king. Yudhishthira himself is predicting that in future there would be one. He is referring to Maharaj Parikshit, who would be the next immediate. But he's talking about how an ideal king should come and do protect the people and do ideal things. And then he also talked about modern times where we have politicians. They are not kings per se, because they have to split things with parliament. But we still have people who are like kings. And I just wanted to mention this example. Look at currently the situation in Egypt, where President Mubarak has been like a king. After all these riots and everything occurred, all over the country, he finally named a vice president. And they said he named one after 30 years. There was not one, even if he had a nominal vice president named, who was not functioning, it's still, he has shared power. But no, after 30 years. So in all respects, he was like a king. He would be an example of a modern king who is a despot. There are millions of people and the suffering they have gone through. So in this case, we are looking at a situation. It's not so one can ask, what when the king is sinful? Okay. Of course, obvious sins cannot be pointed out, but the suffering of the people has not been relieved. That is one. And we have a reverse situation. Instead of the king protecting the people, you said that he assumes the sins of the people. Far from it. He himself is sinful, and there are many cases of despots like that. So what do we say then to the current situation? Shastra is saying about the ideal king must come and everything. Do we just dismiss it that we are in Kali Yuga, therefore we have this? Because this is a real problem. We are far from an ideal king right now in the world.
Well, the Srimad Bhagavatam itself says in the 12th canto, in discussing the Kali Yuga, he says that in Kali Yuga, the rulers just become plunderers. Those who are sinful people, they become rulers. And somehow through, and Prabhupada writes that the medium is through the vote. Somehow they manipulate or get vote and they become king. I mean, like in some Indian states, as we know, there was like blatant violation of elections. They would just scare away the people and they would just go put in votes. So that sort of assumption of power through sinful means is not going to help anybody. And having said that, that's the problem, Rakshit Prabhu, that there is no one person in whom, or one body in whom, intelligent body in whom the power of nation is invested in. Yeah. Previously, even the ideal kings, they were strictly guided by the Brahmanas and religious principles. And the Brahmanas knew what was needed for the society and how to keep up the maintenance of society. And in that framework, the king would also act, not arbitrarily. So it was actually the intelligent class of people who were ruling the king, ruling the kingdom as through the king. They never would take the kingship themselves, but the king would be always subservient to them because they knew that they had no political ambitions next to me. This is another problem in the modern age. Anybody who is near to king has some ambitions. The whole goal is so corrupted that there is no question of what is needed for the people, what is best for the people. That sort of thinking is gone. At least I think in the modern politicians, that should be ingrained. There should be some sort of inculcation that good of people is the first thing. But then, the practical things is, you know, there is democracy means there is elections. Elections means campaigns. Campaign fund means funds. And funds means you bow down to the people who actually give you funds. So the whole system is kind of all topsy-turvy. Now, we just pray to the Lord, actually. Really pray to the Lord that He send a representative who can really set things right in the order. At least to start with. Yes?
Prabhu, when you're talking about the ideal king, I remember one story which I listened in lecture. Like, it says, like, Yada Raja Tada Praja, like, however king behaves. And there's a king in South India where he put one big bell in front of the kingdom or in front of the palace. And whoever having committed any sins or they want any justification, they'll come and ring the bell. One time it happened to be ringing, the bell is ringing, and they came and saw outside, and one old cow, I think his mother cow, is ringing the bell, and the cow is crying literally. And king came to know, like the king's son, that is Yuvaraja, he rided his chariot on the calf of that cow, so he lost the cow calf lost his legs, and everybody thought, what justification now king do? Because his own son rode the chariot and took on the calf. And king took his own chariot and rode on his son. So he lost his legs. So means the ideal king should be, like, it's one of the representation, the story represents. In that age, nice. The kings are like that. So just a comment or reflection. Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
The other thing I found, we'll end with this last comment if you have any more questions. Other thing I found is that for your position which you are in, or your position, you need so many degrees, so much of training. You are required to do so much of thorough knowledge and understanding before you actually are hired for that position. It always seems ironical to me that the President of the United States has never done that job. He just has some idea and he just you are going into the most powerful job on the planet, yet you have no basic training how it works. All you do is somehow go in, get in there, cling on to the power for next two terms. That's it. And it's unfortunate. Any other questions? Any other comments? All right. Now the spotlight turns onto Sri Rama Prabhu, and he is going to give us the presentation. What is the presentation about, Prabhuji? Co-protection, or is it Varashram Dharma, or what are you? Is it somewhere in between? Or? Okay. It's a surprise presentation. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaurabhakta Vrinda ki jai. All glories to assembled devotees.